Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Football Podcast Show number 198, and you will have to excuse us for a minute because football fans down under have just flown a drone onto our table with their show logo, so we're going to actually have to cease recording of this show. We may be back in about half an hour. No? All right, fine then. I'm here with Dan and Andy. They're clearly not up with their topical news, but...
No. Very, very, very up to date with the topical news. Yeah.
I'd quite like it if FFD, you did fly a drone all the way from Australia.
I mean, it'd be pretty impressive. And how long were you practicing that?
I wasn't, to be honest. I'm not all with it, Sam. I'm a bit tired.
What's making you tired?
Life, Andy.
Married life.
Life and being a Man United supporter.
No, mate, we're fine. We're in the Champions League place. I hope the season ends tomorrow. We're laughing. Back in the big time.
I think you'll get a spot, though. I really do. I think you'll be in the spot.
Do you know what? Actually, I nearly said something last week, but I didn't, right? How I get so much stick for talking about Spurs all the time when I hardly actually do. We talk about United.
It's because people care about United.
And I'm not. I'm cutting you off right there.
No, mate. I only ever mention it when it's
relevant.
We
talk about
Andy
United.
I'm not saying Coxon.
I'm saying... We talk about Man United every single week.
Well, one would imagine it comes from... And likewise, we talk about Liverpool every week because they get the most column inches. And I'm not being arrogant here because they are the biggest clubs. There's the most interest. Everything is a story. No, not being arrogant. They are the most supported clubs in the country.
We're doing it again. Raheem Sterling has been in the centre of the news.
No, I'm just making the point. I'm not going to talk any more about it.
Let's go back to what you originally started off.
The whole reason Raheem Sterling's been in the press this week is because everyone cares about Liverpool. The newspapers will publish about Liverpool because more people have interest, buy more newspapers, more viewers
Everyone's
on Sky Sports
second
News.
Bloody team.
I would
disagree with that. I'd say that it's... It didn't really matter that he plays for Liverpool. It's the fact that
It's all come from the whole Rodgers storage situation. That's the only reason.
It wouldn't
have been as big if it was Andros Townsend. No one would have cared.
I think it'd be exactly the same.
No, I don't think it would have been. Raheem Sterling, maybe it helps that he is the great hope of English football.
I disagree, mate. I think it's the fact that a player, regardless of who it was, has come out and said that he was too knackered to play. When was the last time that happened?
Nobody cared on a similar situation when Alan Smith or Nicky Butt didn't play for England because of convictions that were pending. When it was Steven Gerrard, there was a massive interest.
Maybe life's getting him down as well. It must be tough. Negotiating a new contract.
I don't think it has anything to do with the fact. It's exacerbated by the fact he's England, but I think it's more to do with the fact he's a Liverpool player, Sterling.
Well, Sturridge was the same a few weeks ago. I think the last time, you remember the last time a player actually said that he couldn't play because he was knackered? I'm not in a detrimental way, but...
He's never been put in the public eye before.
This is what I mean. That's why I think it's made such a big deal out of it, because it's never happened before.
At least not the same way, yeah.
Was Roy having a bit of a dig?
No, I don't think it was at all.
I think he was having a dig at Rodgers.
We're all shouting here massibly. Can we just calm down a bit?
It's a heated debate.
No, it's not heated debate.
It is.
Everyone else is listening.
We're all shouting. Yeah.
I think it's because it was Rodgers. I think the whole thing that happened with Rodgers and Sturridge, I think Hodgson was making a point.
Part of it's Sturridge and Rodgers, part of it's Roy Hodgson having his own little dig at both of them.
At what point do you think was a dig? Do you think there's the fact that if it had been Rooney or something like that, if it had actually been knackered and gone...
Rooney would have been ten times worse.
Yeah, but do you think that the fact that he just came out and said the truth, do you think he came up to him and actually said in training, boss, I'm knackered, I'm not going to be able
well,
to...
Well, that's it, we don't know. And I'm not going to criticise a player if he wants to do that, because if you're not feeling up to him,
that is laughable, isn't it?
What do you mean?
It's not like there's been a fixture pile-up for him at the moment.
But he's a young lad. He's had a very intense year. It's his first couple of years in professional football. He's been played a lot more than most 19-year-olds.
He wants to try being you or me.
You know what? I'm going to hark this back to a subject we're not meant to talk about, but somehow a couple of the podcasters, myself included, have acquired a digital copy of a certain Irish footballer's book.
Have you got one?
Yes, I'll forward it on to you through means that are perfectly legal. And he talks all about when he was in... Roy Keane, of course, if you're stupid. He talks all about how he used to play through the pain when he was injured, and his career was ended early by the fact he was playing with a hip injury, how he'd taken painkiller injections, how he was too proud to say he wasn't fit enough to play. So I think it only makes sense.
Well, I've got no problem with it whatsoever. Yeah. I've got absolutely no problem with it. And it, you know, then you look into the... who is it? So it was... It was one of the Dutch physio. I don't know how it was related, how he's related to the setup, anyway, or why he's stuck his nose in. It was in the Metro this morning.
This isn't the guy who used to be a fitness coach for Wales and worked with Gary Speed, maybe. Was it?
So he said that, you know, he's basically calling Hodgson a dinosaur, saying that he doesn't understand that the modern day players, they might need extra rest. You can't look at it black and white as old school, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, he made the... And I say a good point. I don't know if it's fucking valid or not, but the point that when you're looking at these more explosive pace players that have a lot more X amount of muscle protein or whatever fibres or whatever it is, they need greater rest because they use up greater amount of energy because it's all about the short sharp burst, blah blah. I mean, I don't know if that. I mean, he's a professional. It sounds like he knows what he's talking about. I don't know if that's true, but if it is true, it's a valid point.
Maybe over the course of a season, but we're only in like 2 months into the season, aren't we?
Yeah, but if you bear in mind, Sterling played at the World Cup, had a few weeks off, then was in pre-season travelling around the world with Liverpool. But then a lot of these...
Yeah, played every game for Liverpool, though, is he?
A lot of these so-called experts are effectively witch doctors as well. Yeah, they go off some hokum pocus, rub beer-covered cheese on your ankle and you'll be fine.
If we look at the black and white of it, right, if we listen to the fact that... If the fact is that for whatever reason... Raheem Sterling didn't think he was at 100% fitness and didn't think that he could give his best for that game. For whatever reason, I think that is absolutely fair enough and spot on. In fact, if anything, I think he's done something for the team and gone, if we're looking at it sort of in a really naive way, if you know what I mean, if he's genuinely not felt up to it and he's gone to the turnaround of the boss and gone, I think you're better off starting someone else because I'm just not feeling up to it. I think I'd do that.
It's admirable, but just to play devil's advocate on it at the same time, if you're a young, hungry professional footballer being asked to play for your country, if it isn't an actual injury, if it's just tiredness, that is when you start questioning their commitment, you start questioning their hunger. If they don't want to play in a qualifying game, and the big worry has been that these qualifiers are effectively meaningless. Let's face it, we are almost already through. Of the top seeds, there are only two that haven't dropped any points, England and Italy. Italy only squeezed a 1-0 win in Malta, which is a lot worse than a 1-0 win in Estonia.
We'll get on to that.
Yeah,
though.
I can understand why you may not be motivated, but then you've got to ask yourself, well, if all he's feeling is that he's a bit tired and he can't give his all, is it physical or is it mental? And I'm not
probably
saying it probably is a bit of both.
I actually didn't give a monkey's whether he played or not, because I think we've got so many players of his ilk anyway. I don't think we missed him.
Well, I personally...
I'd totally disagree with we haven't got any players of his ilk.
Well, I don't know about Chamberlain.
We've got one other.
Yeah, I will say why Oxlade-Chamberlain isn't starting every game for England is beyond me.
Sterling.
I was making the point in there, but sorry, I'm like I said, I'm tired.
We're all a bit argumentative.
We're all a bit happy to weigh in, aren't we?
But go on, Andy.
I think we've got enough players who are creative enough in an England shirt, especially against a team like Estonia, to not miss Sterling at all.
But that's the
he's not creative as well. But he's not all creative, really. He's beating the man.
We
expect
things to come through him, don't we?
We've got this attitude, it's only Estonia. It's not only Estonia. Estonia nearly qualified for the last Euros. They're not mugs. They are not... We seem to have this attitude that we have every right to beat every country that isn't historically great. There's maybe a handful of nations in Europe that we don't expect to just walk
over. This is where I'll disagree with you again, is it? But mate, I just think that it's fucking Estonia, mate. They haven't even got any players that play in decent leagues.
Okay, well, it was a grim old game, wasn't it?
Oh god,
that
it was
is the
terrible.
Equivalent of a Chelsea fan saying, "Well, we're definitely going to beat Sunderland every time."
I mean, it's nothing like that at all.
Of course, it is. It's a team that is weaker, and
the Premier League's totally different. You can't do it.
No, but I think in quality, it's the equivalent we've seen across these qualifiers. I'll tell you, I've really enjoyed this international week. I think it's been fucking brilliant.
Not for England.
No, exactly.
Upsets everywhere.
Exactly, I agree with you, Aaron.
No, for England, I think fair enough. We've picked up 6 points. It's been boring, but we've got the points.
Oh, no, I'm happy about the points that we've picked up.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
But I think we talked about it on last week's show. I was looking forward to this whole round of international games because of, actually, the positivity around the rest of the home nations. And haven't they had a fantastic time?
They have.
That's been brilliant. England's just upset me.
Look at some of the results.
I'm not upset by England.
Oh, not upset me. It's just disappointed me, really.
And look at some of the results, though. I mean, Northern Ireland beating Greece is an obvious one, but the likes of Iceland beating Holland. I mean, you can look.
Gylfi Sigurdsson is on absolute fire at the moment. Did you see his goal last night as well?
No, I haven't seen it. No.
It was a sort of a reflex. It was sort of a melee in the box. The ball's come up. I swear he's hit it at the same side as his shoulder. Like, so he's hit a volley that's like, I mean, his leg's got to be like square on, and he's sort of put a bit of undercut backspin on it, and it's gone sort of straight into the top of the net nearly. He is on fire.
He's a naturally talented, great player. But I mean, you look at.
I wish we could have gotten to fit in at Spurs, but he just didn't. He didn't have that.
It's one of those players where you see.
Wasn't the right player.
And we've seen it time and time again with players over the years. Players who do really well for a club like Swansea, and then get cherry picked by one of the big six or whatever. And they're bench warmers, and when they come on or are given their chance, it's very hard to actually make it. It's very similar to what we were talking about last week
about the right player in the right team. Mm. You can be a world class player, but if you're not in the right team, then it might not suit you.
It's obviously, I mean, this rich run of form for him internationally obviously goes back to obviously how he started the season for Swansea.
There was an article in the Mirror actually, which was really nice. Gary Monk was really. Complimentary of Spurs, saying that Gylfi Sigurdsson has come back an even better player. It was a nice little thing. He said obviously that he's benefited from the training and the games that he's played at Spurs. He was a good player when he left Swansea. Now he's come back again after being at Spurs, which I think is a real nice indictment of as a club. He said he's even better, and he has. He's been on fantastic form. It's great to see because he's one of those lads that I think Gylfi is that you just want to do well. He seems like a good lad. He doesn't seem like a nasty character. No, he just seems like a really good lad.
Yeah, he does. He's a good footballer. I like watching him play. But
technically, he's fantastic.
You can't ever blame a player for wanting to play for a big team. If the big guns come in for you, you've got to believe that they want you to play.
Well,
you can't blame that player. But I think the great thing is that he's been given the opportunity at Swansea, and he's taken it, and I hope he stays there and actually gives.
Yeah, no, I think he will.
I hope he stays there now and kicks on.
But that goes back to the point I was making about Sterling earlier. You expect players to aspire to play at the highest level and give their all, and I can understand why there might be a negative attitude towards Raheem Sterling not wanting to play for his country because he feels a bit tired. Now, again, don't know the physicality around it.
But it's the way you spin that, Mikey.
Of course, it's the way you spin it.
You said he's not playing for his country because he feels a bit tired.
No, but I'm saying that's how you view it.
Hang on, stop it. You're being really naughty today.
No, but you're not letting me make a point.
Mikey, you've spoken for 3/4 of the time here, and there's 3 of us.
I seriously doubt.
I'm just saying that you can put a spin on it to be like, but as I was saying from the flip side, is that if he's genuinely not feeling up to the game, whatever that may be, I think it's admirable that he's actually said it. Now we get onto the point where, was it right of Roy Hodgson to actually just say, I've decided not to play Raheem Sterling and just leave it at that, or to actually say, he told me he was a bit tired? Do we think that he should have just gone, I've decided to start Adam Lallana, and that is it?
Well, that's where I think it comes into the whole thing with Rodgers. As I said, I think it was a dig at Liverpool.
And I agree
completely.
I completely agree with that.
So you think purely that was a dig at Liverpool? That's fair enough.
I think it was. There you go. But, I mean, going back to the point I was making a few minutes ago, we've seen these shocks around Europe this week. Slovakia beating Spain, Poland beating Germany. The fact that England have come away with points, it might be turgid, it might be shit. We have no right to beat these teams, though. We have no right to oversee.
What about the Scots? I mean, the Jocks have done amazing, haven't they?
Did anyone see the game last night?
I was flicking between that and the Ireland game.
It was a really good game, and
it went 2-1 up, didn't it?
Poland really fluffed their lines in front of goal quite a few times, and they should have won the game, but it's. Scotland never used to get points out of games like that, and it's unbelievable. I think it's really, really encouraging. I'd love to see a couple of home nations in the next major.
They certainly haven't over the last few years, Scotland. Historically, let's not forget, Scotland are one of Europe's more successful teams, and that's going up to the 1990s. That isn't going too far back. But yeah, they look like turning the corner under Strachan. He's a good motivator.
Well, the
last tournament was 98. They nearly qualified in 2000. They had a good run on the way to 2008 when they beat France home and away.
Yep.
They were very unlucky to go out in that group stage because of a dodgy goal against Italy. But
to be fair, their pool of players up until the last couple of years has been really, really quite frustrating if you're a Scottish manager and the Scotland manager, I should say. But now when you look at it and you think, okay, so I've got Fletcher and Rhodes to choose from up front, not bad. You know, you're starting to see, you know, looks like Darren Fletcher's actually going to be able to play on and, you know,
who's
kick
left,
on
the left winger that's
Anya.
Anya, he's the pacey one, isn't he? Yeah.
Well, there's some really good players in the pool now, and I think it's great to see.
Well,
really
the point. Oh, Dan. Oh, fucking hell, Dan.
I was going to high five you.
The point I was going to make is that I hope this is still recording.
No, it is, it's fine.
I've got a tissue in my pocket.
Good lad.
Yeah, if you don't know, Dan's just spilled a load of Thatcher's on my phone.
The spillage.
It's
no,
right.
A tiny
my
bit.
My phone's never working.
Soz.
Scotland's doing what Ireland did for many years, and they're actually extending their pool and looking to recruit players who are of Scottish heritage. So, for example, Russell Martin, who my missus went to school with. Put it this way, he's got a brother called Pepe. They always considered him to be Italian. Pepe Martin,
Russell and Pepe.
Yeah, he's got a few brothers, and I was actually reading an article about it. I think there's four of the brothers, and three of them, Russell and two others, have very anglicised British names, and then there's Pepe. But she said never had any Scottish blood in him as far as she was aware. He must have a grandparent, and the same with Anya coming through.
Why not?
I believe he was raised in Scotland of different areas, and they're looking to extend this pool of players, and it's what Ireland have done for years, what Wales have done for years.
Yeah.
It's arguably what England should be doing. Spain are fucking doing it with Diego Costa. So.
No, exactly. And I tell you what though, Robbie Keane knows how to score a goal, doesn't he?
Or three.
He is at international level.
First ever hat trick at international level.
No.
Isn't it?
No.
No, it was his hat trick of hat tricks.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah. It was a big hat trick.
Yeah, it was a hat trick.
In terms of international goals, he is now three behind Gerd Müller.
Is he really?
I mean, he's unbelievable. 65, did we say it was earlier?
65, yeah.
65, like, and bearing in mind,
how many caps?
Oh, well into the hundreds, surely.
Oh, yeah, he's Ireland's.
Because O'Shea got his 100, didn't he?
Yeah.
What a game to get it in.
And with the last touch of the game. Amazing. But no, I mean Robbie Keane, I love the fact that he's still leading the Ireland's line and he's still doing the business. Right? And that,
I've never been a big fan of Keane. I'll be honest, I've never been a big fan of him.
Most Irishmen aren't, by all accounts.
But he does not do the business. His partnership with Berbatov at Spurs was one of my probably favourite little memories. On a shit growing up as a Spurs fan. But that, he just knows where the goal is, doesn't he? And
I think if I was an Irishman, I'd probably really like him because he does well for his country. But he's too much of a journeyman for me. You know, really did follow.
Fair enough. X amount of clubs, spent this amount
he's
of money.
Been but around,
well,
hasn't
well, there was always the joke about how every club he went to, he said, "I've dreamed of playing for Tottenham since I was a boy. I've dreamed of playing for Coventry since I was a boy. I've dreamed of playing."
When he joined Liverpool, which was actually his boyhood club, it was hard to actually sell it.
I actually wrote sketch around it once, which if I ever somehow do anything with comedy, I think would work very nicely.
You
we'll
do
save that.
Comedy every Wednesday lunchtime, Michael.
Yeah, I know. I do it every Saturday night as well, if you ask my missus.
If we're talking about last night as well, we've got to mention Albania and Serbia. The drone
that FFDU sent into the stadium, annoyingly. Terrible bastards.
Everything about that is is unbelievable.
It's a hilarious story.
So we were looking at this earlier, aren't we, Mike?
For anyone who didn't watch the football last night or hasn't turned on the news today.
Google it.
Would say that you might not believe it happened, which will become more relevant when Dan tells the story.
Right. How?
Well, because the stadium announcer might have something to say about whether or not it was believable.
I forgot that bit.
The best bit of the story.
The best bit of the story, you're right.
You've ruined it now. No, he hasn't.
No,
because whatever you imagine that means, it's 10 times better.
It is, and I'll let you have that one, Mikey, if you remember that. No, so basically, obviously, it was the first time that Albania had played in Serbia since 1967.
Yeah.
There's 3,500 police were part of this. Right? No Albanian supporters in there allowed in there whatsoever. for safety reasons. Anyway, so 41 minutes.
Basically, these police, every breath you took and every move you made, they were watching you.
Oh, no. Fuck, here we go.
You like that?
Here we go. So, more musical references. We'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, I love the fact that it's accused that Albania's Prime Minister's brother was supposedly accused of being the one controlling the drone from the director's box. But this is from state TV, I think.
That is his younger
in
brother.
Albania,
naughty brother.
Yeah. He made a statement saying that was bollocks and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but obviously the whole thing turned into a farce. It's obviously all the political history and everything like that, but
yeah,
it was the fact that the flag had the two Albanian leaders on and the greater, is it the greater Albania in inverted commas,
and it was an Albanian flag but over a outline of Kosovo, which is obviously Serbia don't recognise Kosovo as a state, a lot of the world do, it's a contentious issue.
And unfortunately there was, and apparently throughout the entire time you can hear chants of Ubij, 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 Siptara, which basically...
I can't believe you just said that, Dan.
Well, no, it basically translates calling for the killing of all Albanians and other chants around that.
You hear worse at Millwall every week.
Yeah, you're right.
When was the last time you went to Millwall?
Well, I don't know, but I ran into some fans the other week down London Bridge. That was fun.
Yeah, it was horrific. And like, as Michael was saying, the thing that I think that I love the most about this was...
Well, there was a novel way of trying to placate the fans, because there have been a lot of jokes down the years about Eastern Europe being something of a time war.
For fuck's sake.
No, I'm not going to say they are. I've never been to Eastern Europe. I'm going to Prague in a few weeks. If anyone can recommend anywhere nice, please let me know. I'm going with the missus, bear in mind.
All right, I can't.
But the stadium announcer, when the game was abandoned after 30 minutes, it was Martin...
41 minutes.
Yeah, 41 minutes. Martin Atkinson, Premier League referee, was in charge. He abandoned it. Fair play to Alexander Kolarov as well, who helped get the Albanian players off the pitch. Serbian left-back, Man City left-back. But the stadium announcer decided he would try and cheer the fans up, Andy, you'll like this, with some popular music. Some modern popular music.
To try and chill out the fans and to restore calm to the arena.
Do you want to know what he played? Go on, guess.
A bit of Rage Against the Machine or
something? No. Well, you won't believe what he played, because he played that popular classic from 1999, Believe by Cher.
That was what they did. That was plan A for calming the stadium.
Did everyone get their lighters out and join on?
I don't think they did.
Apparently they were burning the NATO flag in the stands.
Really?
Well, bear in mind, NATO bombed the region in the 90s with the Bosnian War. We won't go into that. Bit heavy.
Another bit of random negative news out of Bosnia as well, that happened this week. It's not been a good week for the Bosnians.
It's not them drawing with Belgium, is it? Because that's a good result.
No, it was a great result.
Yeah.
But it was in one of the Bosnian leagues, goalkeeper Romeo Mitrovic, for some reason, and there's only the clip of him being shown the yellow, gets shown a yellow by the ref in the box, storms over to the box and swings the biggest right hook haymaker you've ever seen. Luckily, it's sort of, the ref just about ducks in time and he sort of catches the top of his head. It was a yellow. Didn't even send him off. Didn't even give him. I mean, not that I'm just justifying the fact that you could. No, he's all. The ref just sort of managed to duck enough so that he connected with the top of his head.
Whoa.
And he sort of ran off.
What day was it?
It's going to be a lifetime ban.
Because there was a similar incident. Well, there was a terrible incident in rugby league at the weekend. We don't talk about egg chasing, but I mean, and the reason I bring this up is that rugby league. So basically, there was the Challenge Cup final or whatever it was.
It was the Super League Grand Final.
This isn't the rugby podcast, Dan. What the hell's going on?
But our mate Dave Beckham, he's been sort of likened to. So basically, what happened is.
Where are you going with this?
No.
He's talking
honestly,
less sense than me this week.
Oh yeah, what is going on?
I don't know enough about names, but basically the geezer, smacks another one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, he didn't just smack him; he knocked him down
with
one punch and then jumped on top of him and gave him a UFC
on the floor,
finishing blow. So yeah. Obviously, there's been a lot of hoorah about it, and it finally he's got how many matches banned?
6 months banned.
6 months banned.
13 matches it works out to.
So yeah. his co coach or whatever has come out and said,
"We are knowledgeable about all sport, aren't we?"
And he's come out and he said, "Hang on a minute, come on. David Beckham got sent off in a World Cup, didn't he, for violent conduct, and it didn't really have a bad effect on his career, did it?"
I don't think he said that.
The coach has said that.
The coach said it, yeah. The guy who was...
The coach has come out and said that. It's quite funny that David Beckham was just petulant, and he deserved his red card for kicking out. This guy's gone and lamped someone. I go back to... Where do you stand on disciplining someone for throwing something that doesn't connect? So there's someone in rugby league that's just been banned for 6 months.
It's taken a long way to get there.
It would have taken someone's head off.
Right, and a lifetime ban of football. Yeah.
So where do you stand on disciplining? Because if anyone can see that the intent was there to smack you.
Okay. The only thing I will say to that is that it was an official.
That's even worse.
That's what I mean.
You're not even competing against him.
Agreed.
Unbelievable.
No, that's the whole point. So that's right. Because if you try to hit another opposition member, then that's obviously you get banned. But then that works out.
Yeah.
That works out. So the fact that the whole point is that the officials are 100% protected. They should be. They're there for everyone to officiate the game. A fight between two players is one thing. Not that I'm fucking condoning any of it. But I think the fact that he's hit an official, or gone to hit an official, and the only reason he didn't connect and knock the geezer's head off was because the referee had some fucking good Jedi reactions, honestly.
Oh, did he move? Did he?
He ducked. The ref had a little Rocky moment, little duck and shimmy.
We're going to have a look at this.
Speaking of referees being attacked, actually leads on perfectly. In Cyprus this week, for the second time in recent months, a bomb has gone off outside the Referees Association headquarters.
What?
A pipe bomb was planted out there. I can't remember the full story. I haven't read. In Cyprus, yeah. And there's a big problem with attacks on officials out there. Now, for me, I trained as a referee when I was 15. I did it for a couple of years.
Did you?
It's not... Yeah, I've been referee, manager, and player, and failed at all of them miserably. I used to manage a team called Shambles United, which should tell you it all.
We've heard about it.
But, all right, Andy. I wasn't talking about United, at least.
Blimey.
Anyway,
you just heard United and just...
Gareth Bale. There's been two attacks outside, and there's been a big problem. Now, like I said, I haven't been a referee, and we've all played amateur football. We've all played football at various levels of grassroots. It's fundamental to the game that you have people supporting that you have people working there, even Premier League, World Cup, wherever you go, right down to having a kickabout on a Sunday afternoon outside the pub. You need somebody there to be able to see anybody. So why you would
agree? Yeah, but I'll go back to the egg chasing point, which I've said numerous times over the many podcasts, that I completely, having played both rugby and football, I completely agree with the way rugby does it.
Yeah,
and I love the way rugby does it, and I think it's brilliant. I think it should be more in football.
Referee's talking, shut up.
Shut the fuck up.
Go away.
That's
what happens.
He is impartial, he's there to do a job. Yeah. I prefer it so much more.
Crack on, 10 yards, here we go.
Yeah, agree.
I would say at any sort of professional level, you mic up the referee. Even if the game isn't going to be televised,
as in not like a live feed the entire time, but the fact that he can turn it on when he wants to.
But I think I would also say recording what the players are.
Oh yeah, but not so you can hear it live.
Not so you can hear it live. No, because that would be asking for trouble. But they will soon learn, because if a player is caught, say Wayne Rooney is having a go at the referee and gets caught swearing, he's going to get a fine because he's swearing on TV. They should all be made aware that you can't behave like that towards a referee.
No,
if you're
going
to do that, it gets picked up. I mean,
speaking of ways that you shouldn't behave.
Listen to the podcast.
Yeah, you're right. Natta Football posted this yesterday, I think it was. Good lad. Coming from Natta Football, I completely trust it's true. Adrian Mutu, the long lost Adrian Mutu. So we haven't talked about this, but we'll mention it very quickly in a bit. Is the the new Indian Super League where you've got likes of fucking Pires and
Luis Garcia.
Anelka's got to be heading there, isn't it?
Anelka's there, but he's suspended.
Definitely.
He's still suspended from the canal.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's not allowed to play, is he?
Anyway, so supposedly Adrian Mutu was denied a visa at the Indian embassy in Bucharest. Where he went to pick one up, as he turned up to apply for it, visibly drunk.
Lad.
visibly drunk.
Like, you imagine, he's going to rocked up
with a hooker.
I imagine so.
And yet you they're
allowing... you can't prove she's a hooker.
And yet they're allowing Peter Reed to manage out there. I can't believe Peter for a second. Reed, David James.
Yeah, he's out there as well.
Yeah.
Peter Reed's managing Mumbai and they lost to Calcutta in the first game.
Robbie Keane will be playing out there next season.
Well, speaking of playing in a marginal league, hello Australia, your league's back this week.
Yeah, it is.
And Melbourne City, who... apparently used to be some really good team, but God knows how it's gone.
Changed their colours.
David Villa scored on his debut for them.
Did he?
But to be fair, it was a great bit of movement from another legend of the European game and another former member of the UEFA Team of the Year.
Damien Duff.
Damien Duff, yeah. 2002 UEFA Team of the Year, Damien Duff was on the left wing.
Playing in the same team?
Yeah.
Wow.
Fair enough.
They're going to be a handful.
Yeah,
very interesting. I think we may cover that a bit more over the next 2 weeks.
Guys,
definitely. I think I'm going to do a little, next week I'll sort out a proper A-League.
A-League recce.
A-League recce, yeah.
Did anyone pick up on Rio Ferdinand's latest, well, apparently he's going to be fined again.
Oh, should I be a scat?
Yeah, I had no idea what that meant.
Yeah, no, I'd never heard it before.
I didn't know what it meant.
I saw the tweet ages ago.
Yeah, it was derogatory.
I saw the tweet ages ago because it got publicised because he basically talked about someone's mum. I was like, that's funny. It's a mum joke. Mum jokes are always funny.
Of course.
He's a bit stupid, isn't he? I mean
he is.
What, Rio Ferdinand? No.
That is the fucking understatement of the year, Rand.
Well, Rio Ferdinand, I quite liked him when he called Ashley Cole a chocolate. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, but you...
but still technically not cool.
Yeah.
No.
Technically not
cool. Luckily, we don't have to be politically correct.
And it doesn't exactly make him Oscar Wilde, does it, calling someone a chocolate?
The master of wit, sarcasm and repartee.
Yeah.
He is not.
So, but he got 45 grand for that one, didn't he? So what are they going to sting him for this time? I think it's hilarious.
I don't know, but I just like the idea of Rio Ferdinand saying, there's a repartee in my pants.
Anyway.
I just want to ask this, why
do footballers feel the urge to get onto Twitter? I mean, it's brilliant for us, because it just makes us laugh, but why do they feel the urge?
The same reason
any of us
egos.
Do.
I'm going to go with the correct answer to that question. Right. If there is egos.
But it's not helping them in their career, is it?
It's egos.
But I mean, they just want to get hold of them all and say, do you know what? You can have a Twitter account when you retire, but whilst you're a footballer, why don't you just keep your stupid opinions to yourself?
I think we've talked about this before.
Just
it's the big if it worked well, if it worked properly, if they weren't stupid about it, it connects you.
Footballers are stupid, aren't they?
Absolutely, but it connects you to the modern football player much more than you could do in theory. But the problem is that you're right. If in theory that everyone was actually sensible, let's take a second to imagine if the world was actually a sensible place, which obviously it's not. But imagine if I could tweet Christian Eriksen next week and go, "Great game this week, mate. I thought he did blah 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 blah," or something like that. Or have you thought about, I don't know, X Y Z? And he tweeted me back saying, "Good idea," or "Thanks," or something like that.
But it doesn't.
This is what I mean. So there's no actual. As much as you sort of have that argument that it brings you closer to the players and the fans, but there is
question.
No actual interaction with your average.
So do
player.
You feel so, more connected with football?
I think I do because I think it's the insight into their actual psyche as opposed to
disappointing though, isn't it?
Well, obviously, but you know what we say, like, when we've talked about this as well before, is like for an interview after the game. So the guy's just scored a hat trick, right? Yeah. Guy scored a hat trick. Team's won 3-0, right? He scored every goal. So, had a pretty good game, didn't you, today?
Yeah, I was the
Dan.
Best player on the park.
I'm just really happy that the team got the 3 points and that we got it. No, you're not. You're fucking chuffed that you just scored a hat-trick. Just say, did you see how good I was today?
Yeah, I've got a match
I
ball.
Was on fire.
I'm going out getting lucky.
It's quite nice to get away from the closet. I think it was it Alistair McGowan or that other fella who does impressions on BBC years ago who always did David Beckham and Steven Gerrard doing
Rory Bremner.
The lads did well, and we take each game as it comes. It's nice to have footballers, and you see them not just saying that, not the same sound bites, giving a bit of an opinion, giving an insight into their life.
It's where they can't be censored,
which
makes it fun for us. But the problem is that, like we said, they're stupid, so they fuck themselves over. So I like it because we get the insight into their actual what they really think, as opposed to what they think in front of what they're told to think.
And ultimately, it's our culture. Who hasn't posted something on the internet that they have probably later regretted? A stupid statement.
That snapping has really fucked me up.
Hey, I know. Yeah,
there are pictures of my cock all over the place.
Yeah, I know. I've got. I'm re-wallpapering my bedroom.
Dirty bastard.
But who hasn't done that kind of thing? The fact though that it's happening to someone high profile and getting more insight just builds it and. It's
great.
I think
it's great for us and shit for them.
Yeah. Basically. Can I also ask, did anyone see the interview that Wayne Rooney gave alongside Roy Hodgson just before the Slovenia game, in the build up to the Slovenia game? It was on Saturday.
Estonia. Well, where he was talking about being an inarticulate scouser.
No, it was just so funny. You had Roy Hodgson, who's very good with the media. I think he's fantastic. Very comfortable.
They all love him, don't they?
No, but I think he's really good. I think he just handles himself very well. And then. He saw. I don't know what you think, Wayne. I think they were talking about the pitch being really good, and he just goes, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, but bear in mind this.
That was just brilliant.
Bear in mind this has come off the back of Hodgson saying that Rooney's not a great orator because he's from Liverpool.
Yeah. Rooney was just sitting there. Yeah. He was sitting there like a teddy bear in Hamleys, just waiting to be taken off the shelf. It was fucking.
He's not a great orator because he's from Liverpool.
He said he doesn't necessarily get his message off because he's got a thick Scouse accent, which Rooney played down very well. And the point, I think. Hodgson was trying to make.
Come if you'd just gone. What are you fucking talking about? And just gone like a minute of just.
Hey, you don't understand
a word that he said.
You could just see the camera just went onto Wayne Rooney's face, and he was just like
rabbit in the headlights.
Well, to be fair, it's quite.
It was so funny.
To be fair, it's quite.
Just did a little dance, a little jig, diddle it, dun dun dun.
Even have that in him. Mate.
It's quite harsh on a young working class lad with very little formal education.
Young. He's what, 28.
He's not young.
No, not for football, but for as a person, relative.
He's had training in. Training in media.
He's older than me. Yeah.
Do you call yourself a young man?
Of course I do, mate.
I don't.
I'm a spring chicken.
But he's had training in media since he was bloody 17 years old, Wayne.
To an extent, but they don't have the same. Articulation.
He's just got no charisma.
And it's not just Rooney, it's Gerrard. It's
oh, yeah, I'm just picking him out.
You'll hate this as well. You'll hate this because we haven't just at the point where I tweeted on Saturday night when he was having one of the worst fucking games I've ever seen. And yes, he scored the free kick, which was
Sunday night, you moron.
Sunday night, sorry. I think Wayne Rooney was fucking abysmal.
He was.
And I really. And I can't remember the last time.
His touch was so bad, wasn't it?
Terrible. His touch was terrible.
But one thing Wayne Rooney did that not many England players do is scored a great free kick out of nothing. The way it was developed, the Sony goalkeeper should have kept it out. But it was low, it was from quite close in. It curled, it dipped over.
It was alright.
It doesn't paper over the cracks, but we don't have many players who can do that.
I just wish that. It's just a shame because he doesn't. Honestly, and I meant this, not even in a dig, like, when was the last time he was consistently good?
Quite a few years.
International or club level?
Either.
Club
really?
Level last season, he was consistently.
Really?
In a very rotten
United
team.
I'll play devil's advocate here because I do agree with you, but his goal scoring record for England in the last 18 months has been absolutely.
Yeah.
Five international strikers that have scored more goals than him, like in competitive games.
Have we looked at the teams we played though? I'm playing devil's advocate. The teams we played.
We've still got scored goals,
mate.
If you're up front, you're going to score.
I'll make the point then. Daniel Sturridge has started pretty much every England game this year. He hasn't scored as many goals as Wayne Rooney.
And that's why,
look at the opposite. Is that a fair representation of the opposition we played?
Either we accept statistics
penalties,
or we don't.
To count penalties?
I think Rooney scored one penalty for England this year. Daniel Sturridge has scored twice. He scored three times for England,
I don't look at Sturridge in the same light as I look at Rooney.
And don't get me wrong for a second, I'm not saying Wayne Rooney, I don't think he's ever lived up to his potential. I think he's had two.
I think that is it, Matthew.
I agree.
I think that is it.
He's had two exceptionally good seasons for United where he's scored 35
Which is pathetic, really.
But
in his entire
he's
career,
he's earning over
£300,000
a year. Oh, a week, isn't he? Over £300,000 a week.
Bear in mind, I think he does bring a lot because he does work hard. He does clearly care about playing football. He's not somebody who's there for money. He's not Michael Owen. He's not Robbie Fowler, someone who is there, he's happy to coast along, have a good living.
It just really upsets me because he was really that fuck me when he came up.
He was that hope.
Yeah, and even more so, like, Sterling's a good little player, right? Don't get me wrong, Sterling's a good little player.
I don't think he's the player to make him out to be.
He's a good player, right? For me, he's another, he's a Pedro for Spain sort of thing. Like, he's a good winger, he's a good talented player. That's it. Wayne Rooney was the one, if you know what I mean. He had everything. He had the touch, he had the pace, like,
everything. All I'll say about Sterling and what you're saying is that, you know, there's a lot to be said about, you know, Bale was being looked at in the same light. I know you're a big fan of Bale, you know, and Bale was very inconsistent, a bit like Sterling before he had those incredible seasons.
But up until he was about 19.
Bale didn't break through until he was about 22. How old's Sterling?
No, because Bale's only what now?
Bale signed for Tottenham in what, 2006?
When he was 17.
No, he'd had a season at Southampton, 17, 18, yeah. But then it wasn't until 2011 that he came through actually emerged as a really good player.
You know, but Bale suddenly became the big player. I'm just saying, you know, at the moment Sterling's being talked about in a light which I don't agree with.
No, I think you could, as well. Yeah, and I think you can't put Sterling and Bale in the same
different
breath.
Players.
Sterling was a lot higher rated at the age he is now than Bale was at the age he was.
And which is why I think that he will end up being nowhere near the player that Bale is.
Maybe.
Yeah, arguably, but...
I'm just going back to the point, I fucking love football. And unfortunately that is the be all end of it. He is a letdown, and it's really sad for me to say because I fucking love football. I love England, and you want him. You're sitting there, I'm sitting there on the couch, you know, screaming on the pub, screaming like you want him. Just please, Wayne, just fucking be that player that we all know you can and want to be. And when he's not, it just, every time, even though you kind of expect it every time, maybe he's going to do it this time, maybe he's going to, and he doesn't, and I die a little bit inside every time.
If Rooney had been left to his natural talents and his own devices, he wouldn't be half the player he is, simply because he was such an unpolished diamond. You look at his first 2 years ever and he scored very few goals.
Wasn't he played as an attacking midfielder?
No, he was played as a striker, and he was very frustrating. My dad's an Evertonian.
He'd come off the bench a lot, didn't he?
My dad was the happiest man you'd ever meet when they got 30 million for him, because he said he's brilliant, naturally talented, but he doesn't have...
Rooney has been
turned into this sort of slightly polished player. I wouldn't say he's still fully polished, but he scores goals, he's effective, he will be England's record cup winner, he will be England's record goal scorer. History will remember him as a great player.
I agree with that, I would argue that he is England's
best player since Paul Gascoigne, and probably one of our top 10 players of all time, but he could have been our number one, I think.
For what he did for England, I think you've got to say Beckham was above him.
He took us to one World Cup. Rooney's arguably taken us to a few tournaments. He's our record qualifying goal scorer.
Not by himself, I don't know.
England have been pretty rotten down the years, and he scored more competitive goals for England than anyone.
It's just the whole thing of just you know what I mean? Yeah. We'll move on. I think we can all agree
that Rooney isn't as good as we would have liked him to be. Messi or Ronaldo.
You're right. Speaking of youngsters, though, or your young potential, Norway's Martin Ødegaard became...
Don't quote us on that pronunciation.
Ødegaard became the youngest player to appear in a European Championship qualifier.
Yep.
15 years old and 300 days.
He was born...
Can we just appreciate this, right? 15... A couple of months short of his 16th birthday, right? And he's playing international football.
Who was it against?
Who did they play? They beat 1-2 against... Bulgaria.
Bulgaria. Yeah.
And were they home or away?
Home.
So I'm not just trying to quiz you. He set up the winner.
He actually set up the winning goal.
So you're 15 years old. He played in a friendly before.
This is his competitive debut.
I'm having a midlife crisis
at turning 29 tomorrow, right? But this kid is half my age, pretty much, and he's playing international football.
Do you want some context?
The fuck?
He was born after Eric Cantona retired.
Wow.
Jesus Christ. There's some context for you.
Oh, there you go. So painful. He was born when Arsene Wenger was in his second season at Arsenal.
That is so insane. I say what's really upsetting as well. I love the fact we haven't fucking ranted for like the last 45 minutes. two things from me, two really quick things from me. Leandro Damião stooped to a new level of scumbagness this week.
Who would have thought it could have got lower than being perennially linked to joining Spurs?
Who
as
thought?
He was a few
who
years
would
ago.
Have thought, Michael? There is footage of him from his club game in Brazil this week, where a free kick's coming into the edge of the box end. And he's actually spotted pulling his own shirt to try and win a penalty. He reaches back.
I don't think I've ever seen this.
Never. It's amazing. Google it if you can.
It's a football first.
As the free kick's being taken, and obviously, you know, the movement of players move towards the goal, he had a little look to the defender
shirt
behind him.
Shirt simulation.
Grabs his own shirt from behind with his left hand and pulls it back.
Shirt. I bet you'll get a couple of lads doing that on a Sunday morning.
To try and convince, like, I mean, he didn't go down. He didn't actually go down. You know what I mean? But, like, to look that, obviously, the ref, he's trying to let see the ref that a shirt is being pulled. Yeah. And the bastard tries to get a fucking penalty by pulling his own shirt.
I'll tell you what, though, and just very, very, and I know you've got another point, but going back to what Mike was saying about officiating and how much we rely on people, I mean, how difficult is it to
when you've got fucking scumbags doing stuff like
free
that?
Free kicks and corners. Are you supposed to actually look govern what's going on? And then you've got some cunt like that doing it.
Oh,
I'll throw this e-bomb in.
Oh, we've not had one this week. My biggest bugbear is that referees, for me, they should have the power to just turn and say, look, I'm going to be watching in the box. If I see a shirt being pulled and I can tell who's pulling it, because you get that much jostling in the boxes, you get that much nastiness, not just from defenders, but attackers to cover off goalkeeper. You say, well, straight away, I'm going to give a penalty or a free kick, it's going to be a booking. Penalty area's a different story.
It's all fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
The other little one for me, great bit of banter. So the head of the ethics investigation into FIFA, which is led by Michael Garcia.
What a ridiculous name.
Ridiculous. So his lead point was that FIFA has to change its culture. I think the headline, no shit, comes up there. But basically, what was quite interesting, that he's called for a change of culture, in inverted commas. Basically, this was a report by Dan Roan, the BBC sports editor, who explains that it's basically a very, very thinly veiled attack on Sepp Blatter, which is brilliant. And he basically says that the investigation and the adjudication process operates in most part unseen and unheard. We know all this, you know, the whole thing into Qatar. Like the whole point was that there's going to be an investigation, but it's going to be behind closed doors and internal. How can you have a fucking investigation like that and not publicly declare the results? He also said that Vertical as well, leadership that sends a message that rules apply to everyone. And he's basically, I read the sort of report, it's damning, but it's brilliant. And it looks like, I mean, whether or not anything's going to happen here, but it was a proper dig and a proper sort of up yours to FIFA. And with a bit of luck, there might be a complete overhaul. But, I mean, this is, isn't it an internal investigation? Or I don't know, but either way, it's just, it just shows how much of a piss take.
Let's just say I won't hold my breath.
No, I've got one more bit before we go.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, question is, in the time that it's been since the start of the kick-off of the professional leagues in England, who are the teams, there's a couple of them, who haven't won a game yet?
It's certainly no one in League One, because Crewe won at the weekend, but Scunthorpe, who were in 23rd above them, also won against Gillingham. Hi, Jim.
You're going lower league stuff for me, and I can't do it.
No.
Is there a Premier League team that hasn't won yet?
There's... I'll put you out your misery, right?
I was looking at this,
sorry. No one in League Two.
You know, Sunderland have only won one. Sunderland have only lost one game. Do you know this, by the way? Sunderland have lost one game. Because
they haven't won many, they've won one and drawn five. Yeah, yeah.
Burnley
haven't won.
But Burnley are one of the teams in the Premiership. There's one more team in the professional leagues who hasn't managed to win a game. Even Blackpool have won a game.
Yeah.
Don't know, go.
Is it Bolton?
It's Newcastle. Two teams in the Premiership.
Newcastle have won a game.
No, they haven't.
Newcastle won 1-0 against someone at the start of the season.
Well,
they definitely did.
Maybe the BBC's lying to me.
BBC might be lying to you, because I'm fairly sure.
I'll tell you what, I'll check it.
But I tell you what,
knowledge is
Yeah, go on.
Even before that, very quickly, I mentioned Portland. Happy birthday to Northern Nick, who comes down to the show occasionally.
It's his birthday today.
Newcastle have not won a game.
Can you say happy birthday?
Newcastle haven't won a game.
We'll use that as the show photo.
Can you say happy birthday? We'll take a picture of the league. Please.
Well, we maybe won't, but I'll accept that I'm wrong.
Yeah, Newcastle have definitely not won. They've drawn four and lost three.
Can you say happy birthday to me for tomorrow, please?
Dan's got a lovely haircut for his birthday.
It's Dan's birthday. Wait, it's not today, though. I saw Nick's on Facebook. I'm in front of mine. It is Dan's birthday.
If anyone wants to join him, he's having drinks in the porterhouse in Covent Garden tomorrow night.
Mate, what are you doing? Like any of my mates are going to turn up.
You might get a few people that hate you on the podcast.
Fly over from Australia for it.
Any Arsenal fans fancy night out?
Edit
and
that
come
bit
go.
Out. Rick. So after the Estonia game, the Independent thought they'd do a little poll to determine who was the worst commentator on air in football. Right. I mean, I think the results are pretty much.
Are they talking both analyst and
who do you
play
hate?
By play?
Just who do you hate? Just who do you hate? Just who would you just not want to see on TV anymore? Punditing
or here?
Yeah, pretty much.
Townsend's got to be top of the list.
I mean, you're absolutely spot on. Yeah. And well done. Who's second?
Michael Owen.
I'd imagine Tilsley's up there.
It's not on there at all.
It must be former players.
I don't mind
Clive Tilsley.
Owen.
He remembers Barcelona.
Surely.
Oh, pundit. All right, okay. Well, Michael Owen is second. Right, and he's on 2 points. Who came third?
I'm trying to think of other
Graham people. Taylor.
Nah, Mr. Miserable.
Graham Taylor's terrible.
Mr. Miserable.
Loro
came third.
I don't mind Loro either. Actually, I don't mind the old
fourth.
School.
I think fourth is harsh. Fourth's a newbie.
Carra?
No, he's a new. No, even more new than that.
Oh.
Savage.
Had a very bad debut.
Oh, Neville.
Uncle
it's Phil.
Fourth place. This is a bit left field. He's a fucking pain in the arse though sometimes.
Crooks?
No. Clark Carlisle.
We're not down to fifth.
Clark Carlisle.
A bit of a smarter.
Clark Carlisle is shit. Sixth was on last night if you were watching one of the games.
Not Niall Quinn.
Yep. Very good.
I tell you what, Niall Quinn is one of the worst in terms of being biased towards Bobby.
And that's fantastically relevant for who's seventh, Michael, as well.
Gary?
Seventh. No.
Scalzi?
No.
Geeksy?
He's on FIFA as well.
Oh, your man. I haven't played.
Loves a header. Alan Smith, fuck me, did not talk about Arsenal. And in eighth is Gnev.
Oh yeah.
But I thought it was quite a good little, quite a fun little list. I mean, Andy Townsend should just never be on TV ever again.
No, we shouldn't. Get back in your tactics truck and drive off a cliff.
Actually, can ITV fucking listen to that shit, please?
Unfortunately, it was only. It was a poll of 2,500 people, but I love the fact that Townsend got just shy of 40% of the votes.
And his head and shoulders. No one else is in the 30%.
And to be fair, ITV don't listen to this shit, so I don't think anything will happen to me.
Okay.
But on that note, end of the week, end of the show. We are going to have something of a big announcement on next week's show. It's going to be show 199, so it's a big announcement about the 200th show.
Probably something about the 200th show.
Make sure you listen out for that. You know where you can find us on Twitter at Football Podcast. We're on Facebook. /TheFootballPodcast. Visit us footballpodcast.tumblr.com. Real football's back this weekend.
Brentford are away at Wigan. Come on, the bees.
Brentford away at Wigan, United away at West Brom, Tottenham.
You're going down, son.
Who gives a fuck about where Tottenham are? Have a good weekend, really.
Yeah, have a great weekend. Enjoy your football.
Take care of yourself. And give your mum a call.